Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at wvhtf.org.
The West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at wvaflcio.org.
At the legislature today, the first piece of legislation to regulate chemical storage facilities is introduced in the Senate, as one senator, who is a chemist, explains the substance that polluted the Elk River last week. And the state's attorney general and a senator from Kanawha County begin a debate about the state's abortion regulations. This is the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. It's been a week now since a chemical leaked from a storage tank on the Elk River, contaminating the water supply of 300,000 West Virginians. And tonight, some are still unable to use their water. At the Capitol, lawmakers and state leaders are already investigating the spill and looking into new regulations to prevent others from happening in the future. But as life begins to get back to normal, the questions begin to arise. As Aaron Payne reports, the House of Delegates took action today to answer one of them.
Without clean water to use, businesses around the Kanawha Valley were unable to fully operate for several days, losing needed profits. House Bill 4175 was introduced yesterday and sent to the new Committee on Small Business, Entrepreneurship, and Economic Development. The committee approved the bill to be sent to the Finance Committee, which today approved it to be sent to the floor. The delegates voted unanimously to suspend the second and third readings of the bill to allow immediate action. The bill would allow the governor to determine and then provide relief for small businesses which cannot operate in a declared state of emergency. The relief can range from money from the rainy day fund to tax breaks, depending on what the governor deems appropriate. Delegates from both parties then pleaded that the House approve the bill.
Think about for a moment going to work one day and saying you're not allowed. Think about going into work, that work paycheck to paycheck, and your business is shut down due to unforeseeable circumstances. This bill right here is a fantastic opportunity for us to work together as a body to help those in need who, based on a particular crisis that was not avoided by water, whether you're in a salon, a barbershop, whether you're a restaurant, imagine going to a dental office without using water. Those people could not work, and those people rely on going to work to make ends meet.
And I have had people say to me quite specifically that if without assistance, they will not be able to reopen their businesses. And I think that is a very serious concern as we try to get our schools reopened, as we try to get our lives back in order in these nine counties that were affected, as we try to move on and then start to answer some of the serious questions that need to be answered in terms of the long-term issues we need to address on this. We are, quite frankly, in need of immediate help for many of these small businesses in our state, in our area.
Mr. Speaker, and all of you folks who worked on this bill, particularly you, Mr. Chairman, thank you. It's a step, but it's only a step.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the words of a great American, let's get her done.
The delegates voted in favor 97-0 with three absent or not voting to adopt the bill and make it effective upon passage. Delegates said the bipartisan nature of the development of the bill was essential in the execution of its passing.
I want to thank everyone who has worked on this bill to flesh it out and get to this point and move with extraordinary speed. This is an example of what we can do when we set things aside and just figure out how to solve a problem.
I want to thank you all again on behalf of the businesses in Kanawha and Putnam County and all the nine counties, and look forward to working with you in the future to help individuals as well.
The bill now moves across the hall to the Senate. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
Meanwhile, the first piece of legislation to further regulate the chemical industry was introduced today in the Senate, and the state's attorney general warned about price gouging during a state of emergency. Ashton Mara reports from the Senate.
At his budget hearing before the Senate Finance Committee, Attorney General Patrick Morrissey was asked less about his office's finances and more about his investigations, including one into last week's chemical leak. Hours after the Do Not Use advisory was put in place, Morrissey's office announced they would take calls and look into any claims of water price gouging. Morrissey says anyone who raises their prices by 10% on needed items during a state of emergency is guilty of gouging, according to state code. His office received more than 150 complaints Thursday and Friday.
Over the weekend, then we went out and started investigating every single one of the allegations. And Senator, we're in the process right now of following up with letters and with subpoenas on any entity that we think may have committed wrongdoing during this process.
He says now his office is writing letters and preparing subpoenas to the companies accused of hiking up their prices. The discussion of price gouging in committee turned into talk of actual legislation here on the Senate floor as state lawmakers proposed their first bill to regulate and protect the state's water. The bill is sponsored by Senate Majority Leader Senator John Unger, who says it would require above-ground holding facilities storing any type of liquid to be inspected just as they are when stored below ground.
What this legislation will do is close that loophole. It will treat above-ground storage facilities the same as we do underground storage facilities.
Unger says the bill uses pre-existing standards for chemical companies that store liquids underground and the same inspectors who are already employed and examining those underground tanks.
I don't see this as a big burden on the industry itself. I mean, they always say, you know, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. So if we could, if we had such an inspection, registration inspection type program in place for above ground facilities, then this could have been prevented.
But Senator Herb Snyder says he doesn't think proposed legislation will stop there.
The one issue that fell through the cracks here was that you had something that could happen above a major metropolitan water intake. That is going to be the heart of what we're looking at. What is near and around these water intakes? We don't want a knee-jerk reaction and start passing legislation next week. We need to understand from the people that have been on the ground, how can we see that this never happens again?
A chemist who specializes in water, Snyder explains little was known about crude MCHM, the chemical that leaked into the water supply, aside from what was on the material safety data sheets that are standard for all chemicals. He says the MSDS sheet for crude MCHM is the same that would be on a can of motor oil. It won't dissolve in water, but it will flush through the system, as West Virginia American Water officials have said.
If you mixed motor oil into a glass or a pot of water, no, it's not soluble, but it's going to go. Some of it's going to go and mix in just through physical agitation. And you certainly have that in the river where you have a very lightweight oil. It will physically mix. Now, it's not like a teaspoon of sugar or salt that totally dissolves, and it's very, very soluble. But there will be some mixing.
Snyder says crude MCHM has a similar consistency to olive oil. Because of its low solubility rate and the coating effect of oil, it was too much for the carbon-activated filters the company thought could sift out the chemical to process.
I can't blame them because activated carbon filters will take out organics. It's that they didn't realize how much there was. The system became quickly overloaded. And in this case, it couldn't take it all out.
Had there been communication between the water and chemical companies, Snyder says the intake system could have been shut off and the contamination avoided. But he adds the entire situation could have been much, much worse.
We're very fortunate that this was not something extremely toxic. If this had been benzene or cyanide, or I could just name millions of chemicals that are known toxic, there wouldn't have been enough hospitals in the state to hold everybody.
Snyder says he'll be interested in the findings of Senator Unger's investigation, which will begin tomorrow, with a hearing including Major General James Hoyer of the National Guard and members of the Department of Environmental Protection response team. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
During his budget hearing before the Senate Finance Committee, Attorney General Patrick Morrisey was questioned about the intent of an investigation headed up by his office. That investigation is looking into state abortion regulations. Morrisey told lawmakers his office is conducting a broad review of the status of state laws and regulations, but he could not provide a timeline for when the review would be complete.
Currently, West Virginia law permits abortions to be performed up until birth. That's not a myth. That's a fact. I don't think many people realize that, and especially when you have individuals that may perform an abortion up to birth, I think that raises some of the potential safety concerns, because if you can perform an abortion up until 2 minutes before delivery, which you are allowed to under the law, that doesn't mean that every single clinic or entity is doing it, but if you're allowed to do it under the law, that raises questions related to oversight.
Senator Eric Wells questioned the Attorney General's motive for the investigation.
So specifically in the state of West Virginia, how many of those abortions have taken place? Because, you know, when you say that you can take it all the way, you can have an abortion all the way up to 2 minutes before birth.
Right.
You can make that statement, but I'd like to see the facts of where that's actually taking place.
Well, I'm actually focusing on the law, which is my job. The reality is that the law permits abortion to be performed up until birth. There's no argument about that. I think, you know, you can have arguments with respect to how many are occurring. You could have arguments with respect to what the clinics and the hospitals are doing in practice. And I think that's a fair point. But the question of whether the law permits it to birth is not subject to debate.
Wells accused Morrisey of trying to generate media coverage that is misleading the public on the issue. The Attorney General asked for $26,000 a year more for technology upgrades and funding for an additional civil rights attorney. In a moment, we'll discuss the Republican agenda at the legislative session. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 359 to remove the hand canvassing requirements of electronic voting machines while leaving intact the recount provisions. Senate Bill 360 to repeal the article requiring public authorities engaged in the construction of public improvements to pay the prevailing hourly rate of wages. Senate Bill 362 to allow restaurants, private clubs, and wineries to sell alcoholic beverages at 10 o'clock a.m. on Sundays. Senate Bill 363, repealing the law allowing for the placement of roadside memorial markers. Senate Bill 364, to provide that signs for candidacy for public office are not prohibited on roads and highways rights of way. Senate Bill 366, the governor's bill to move the Children's Health Insurance Program from the Department of Administration to the Department of Health and Human Resources. Senate Bill 368, repealing state laws regarding unfair trade practices. Senate Bill 369, to require spending units and subdivisions to purchase commodities and services on a competitive basis. Senate Bill 370, to abolish life imprisonment without parole for juveniles under the age of 18 and establish parole review mechanisms for juveniles sentenced in adult court in line with the meaning and spirit of recent Supreme Court cases. Senate Bill 371, to prohibit the possession of wild and exotic animals. And Senate Bill 373, requiring that all above-ground storage facilities for liquids be registered and inspected. On second reading in the Senate tomorrow, the amendment stage, Senate Bill 278, redefining scrap metal to exclude gold, silver, palladium, or platinum, where the platinum is in the form of jewelry, bullion, ingots, or coins. It's been just over a week since Governor Tomlin gave his State of the State address on the opening day of this legislative session. But with the state of emergency that followed, it feels a little longer than that. In that speech, the governor proposed a 2% pay raise for teachers and school service personnel and a $504 across-the-board raise for state employees. The governor's message was one of moving forward out of the recession and into a brighter future by being fiscally responsible, investing in our children, and supporting small businesses. With the Republican response to the State of the State address, we welcome the minority leaders of the House and Senate. Senator Mike Hall is from Winfield in Putnam County, first elected to the House in 1994. He was elected to the Senate in 2006. Delegate Tim Armstead is an attorney from Elk View in Kanawha County. He was first elected to the House in 1998. Gentlemen, welcome. Glad you're here. First Delegate Armstead, did the House want to set a tone early for this bill to provide some relief for small businesses?
I think so, and I hope so. I think we all realized what a serious issue this is at this point. We have businesses who have been closed for already a week. People have not been able to get a paycheck during that time in most cases, or in several cases. And we just realized that we needed to take some immediate steps. We really can't wait a long time to do this because it's an immediate need. So everyone seemed to realize that on both sides of the aisle, and I was pleased that we were able to work together on that bill.
Anybody talk to the governor as to his support for this measure?
I did not directly, but I understood that there was support for it
The
governor's office.
So, Senator Hall, House Bill 4175, it's on its way to the Senate to provide relief for small businesses in a state of emergency like this. What do you think?
Well, this, you know, as I was watching your program, I had a pretty busy day today, so I'm just learning about the thing. Obviously, people need to be indemnified, made whole when there's an unsurprising event that was unexpected. Now, obviously, with the 97-0 vote, support of the Republican caucus in the House, probably gets strong support of the Republican caucus in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Assume it will the Democratic caucus as well. It'd be kind of interesting, since it is a bill with a fiscal impact, I didn't hear of a fiscal note. I didn't see what, you know, the overall cost to it was.
There wasn't a fiscal note, because really what it does is it gives the governor's office some tools to formulate solutions to this and how they can help. So it didn't set out a particular funding source or a particular, actually a particular program. It just says it gives the governor some discretion to formulate rules for helping, whether that be through loans, through tax relief, different things that might be helpful to small businesses to put their employees back to work.
So there's your answer.
Well, yeah, on that thing's important. I mean, you know, it's obviously an unexpected event like this. You know, you want to try to make people whole or whatever. Our economy, I was writing an article for the AP, and I was thinking about the fact that our economy is really, we're actually pushing ahead in certain parts of it. I mean, when you see our tax code is now going to be in the top 20 in America, I've been in legislature 20 years, and with the elimination of the franchise tax next year and the corporate net coming down to 6% and the food tax being gone, we heard in Finance Committee last week that a couple of other taxes in the mix too. It's $468 million worth of annual tax cuts mm-hmm. that have occurred in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. So, and also that $100 million tax relief, however you want to call it, some people have a different name for it, on the $7,500 tax credit that more people are still finding out about for flex fuel vehicles last year.
Right.
So our revenues are still strong in spite of that. And then to have this happen, it's kind of sad that someday we knew this might happen in America somewhere.
Sure.
Books have been written, fictional
sure.
books have been written, and here it happens
it happened here.
Fortunately, it wasn't a terrible chemical. It was not a good one, but not a poisonous one, like Senator Snyder said.
Now, today in the Senate, John Unger introduced a bill requiring that all above-ground storage facilities for liquids be registered and inspected and allow the DEP to do that. Is regulation here?
Well, my response would be, you know, we're supposed to be the Republicans, supposed to be
that's
the anti.
It. You are.
We're not. We're for reasonable regulations. There's such a thing as majoring on the majors. Obviously, we would all agree this is a major.
Okay.
You ought to know what's going on with these chemicals.
Delegate Armstead, how do you feel about
well,
that?
Well, I agree. I think what we've tried to advocate is responsible regulation. And once we put a regulation in place, let's look at the impact. I think had we looked at the impact of prior regulations, perhaps we would have seen the weakness in this, that this did not cover above-ground storage tanks. And I think we were very surprised that these were not being inspected from here.
My daughter-in-law gets inspected as a beautician in Lewisburg periodically. If there's hair on the floor or something, she's going to be marked up. It's amazing that those regulations are active, and we weren't looking at these types of units. So, you know, we're the party of reasonable regulation, not irritating regulation.
Let's move on to the governor's state of the state address. State finances are strained. Cuts have been made to state government and state agencies. What does your caucus think about getting through these next two or three lean years? What should be done?
Well, I'm on the finance committee, and we did hear the budget report, which was kind of good and surprisingly good in this sense. You know, we've seen a 148% increase in the S&P 500 from March 9th, 2009 up. So the capital markets are doing well, and America's economy at certain parts of it is lifting us. So that Bob Kiss, who now is with Tax and Revenue, and the guys that project this, believe that our years out are not going to be as lean. Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason the governor was able to propose that 2% increase, which nobody foresaw really without that projection. Mm-hmm. But they're doing a few things in there that, you know, that probably will get some pushback, but it looks a little brighter in two or three years.
Delegate Armstead?
Well, I think it really underscores the need to prioritize in our budget. You know, every year we pretty much start from the budget we had the previous year, and everyone seems to want an increase in for this program or that program. We simply have to set our priorities and live within our means, like all of our families are doing at this point, and that will involve some cuts in some programs. I'm not a big fan of just across-the-board percentage cuts because I don't think that does necessarily set those priorities. But I do think that we are going to have to look in the long term at ways that we can improve our economy to bring, you know, increase our tax base. And I think that those are many of the things that we've advocated as a Republican caucus, you know, improving our education system, looking at our tax structure, the types of things, our court system, the types of things that we've seen in other states have improved our economy and increased that base. And that's what we're going to need to do. But in the meantime, we're going to have some tough decisions to make in terms of spending.
What's the number one top on the agenda list for the Republican Party at this session?
Well, again, I think it is, we've looked at the where we are, and we're very optimistic about where West Virginia can be. But at this point, we're near the bottom in job force participation and the number of people who can work who are working in West Virginia. We're near the bottom in terms of K-12 student achievement. Mm-hmm. We're near the bottom, at the bottom, actually, in medium income. So those are things, and we're losing population in West Virginia. So having said that, I think we need to take some pretty bold steps in terms of the things I just mentioned. Our tax structure is not necessarily competitive. As Senator Hall said, we've made some improvements to that, but we still have taxes on the books that are not competitive with other states. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to cut all every tax or anything, but it means we need to restructure our taxes. We need to look at ones that aren't competitive and see how we can change those and put more money back in the pockets of West Virginians to spend in our economy.
That takes a real major effort several legislative sessions, not just one.
It does, but we need to start. Okay. And I think we have, we've seen these indicators be pretty much the same for several years. Mm-hmm. You know, we're near the bottom in these indicators, and that's unfortunate. And there are things we can do, and I think we owe it to the people of West Virginia to do those. We do need to continue to work on our education system. We started that process last year, but we didn't go anywhere near enough, or far enough in terms of giving more local control back to our counties. We still have a top-heavy bureaucracy, and that takes resources away from the classroom and away from classroom teachers and our counties, and we need to address that. I think there's still a lot.
Delegate Hall, I got 30 seconds. Top priority.
Well, I don't know if it's the top priority, but we still are graded extremely low by national organizations in our legal climate area. Mm-hmm. And though there's, in 30 seconds, you can't get into that, but business people are all the time talking about the nuisance lawsuits and settling and so forth. So that though we can't, you know, there's a lot to look at there, but one among an array of issues.
And I promise as legislation moves or is introduced, we'll talk to you about that.
All right.
Senator Mike Hall and Delegate Tim Armstead, minority leaders, thank you very much.
Right. Thank you, Beth.
And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4193, creating a new judicial circuit court in Upshur County. House Bill 4200, to provide that carrying a concealed deadly weapon may not be prohibited in a state or municipal building that has adequate security measures. House Bill 4203, relating to the state's employee grievance procedure, to allow a grievant a reasonable time for a representative to be summoned and appear, and clarifying that participation in a grievance proceeding is considered work time. And House Bill 4205, adding a second judge to the 26th Judicial Circuit in Lewis County. This has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, Ashton Mara is your host as we welcome two of our colleagues from the Capitol Press Corps, Ann Ali, the managing editor of the State Journal, and Dave Boucher, the Statehouse reporter for the Charleston Daily Mail. They'll discuss the highlights of the issues at the legislature this week. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for Legislature Today provided by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvaflcio.org, and by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org. West Virginia Public Radio, telling West Virginia's story, and online at wvpublic.org.